Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Hey, today I'm talking Vision 2020, Educating Georgia's Future, with Matt Jones, the Chief of Staff from the Georgia Department of Education.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids!
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, today I'm talking with Mr. Matt Jones, Chief of Staff for the Georgia Department of Education. We're going to focus on the initiative Vision 2020, Educating Georgia's Future. But before that, we're going to learn a little bit about Matt and we're going to talk teaching. Say hi to everyone, Matt.
Hey.
Thanks for joining me. I'm glad you're here. And let's start by talking about you first and your role as Chief of Staff. What's your major role? What do you do?
First, it's great to be here. I appreciate the invitation. I report to the State School Superintendent, Richard Woods, and my role at the Georgia Department of Education is to oversee day-to-day operations. I oversee all the divisions of the department, curriculum, assessment, IT, and all the others. And really, we're focused on making sure we enact child-focused and classroom-centered policies that can support students.
Excellent. So if you had your druthers, by the way, out of that list, what would you rather do? What's your favorite part?
I actually like it all. So I think I'm in a good role. I kind of get to see the big picture of things, and I feel like my job is to really make sure all these different pieces fit together, because we all know when it gets down to the school and classroom level, all these dots need to form into something that supports kids. So I really focus my efforts on that.
Excellent. I love it. So what did you do before you became Chief of Staff?
I'm actually from Toombs County. That's Vidalia, Georgia, and I was in the classroom for about 7 years. I taught a little bit of everything, so I did ELA, social studies, engineering technology, a CTAE pathway, and most of my background's in 9th through 12th at the high school level, but I did do some 7th grade coursework. Starting off, I didn't say no a lot, so I got volunteered for lots of different things. But given the role I'm in now, it gave me a good opportunity to kind of learn about how the system works and get a lot of experience in a lot of different areas that I think I've been able to bring to the job. Then after that, I became the technology director for the district. I was there for about a half a year, but in the short period of time, we were able to kind of propel the system forward a good bit in the area of technology. We focused on PL for teachers. We figured out a lot of teachers got a lot of technology equipment, but they didn't really know how to use it effectively in instruction. And we also looked at more of a standardization of kind of the applications that we were using and the purchasing process so that we could deliver a better product. And then I was actually named the District Teacher of the Year my last year that I was there as a teacher.
Very cool. Congratulations.
It was a good honor from being selected as Teacher of the Year from my peers, but also I would say really the highest honor that came out of that is I had a lot of students that came up to me and said, "Mr. Jones, you hadn't been Teacher of the Year before. You're such a great teacher. We thought you already be Teacher of the Year." So that really meant a lot that I knew I was having that positive impact on them. But just given my background, I've taught milestones courses or EOC courses. I've been in CTAE, so I've kind of seen different sides of that. I think also just having a rural perspective, a rural school district is very different from other school districts, and a lot of times at those schools we had to do lots of different things and wear lots of different hats. So that was an experience I was able to have as well.
Gotcha. Thank you. What did you like most about working with kids?
I think just the energy that they bring. They certainly have an energy. And I think for almost every teacher, I think it's that aha moment. Teaching is a very difficult job, I think, but kind of what keeps you moving forward is when you work with a student who's struggling and they get it, and you can kind of see that light bulb come off and just kind of a yearning that they want to learn more, and they get really excited about what you're trying to teach them. Also, just being able to give back. I know when I went through the school system, and I actually went back to work to where I graduated from, so I got to work with a lot of the same teachers who inspired me to go into teaching.
Neat.
And I think about the impact that they had on me. And during that time in my life, my family was going through some issues, and I really saw these individuals as kind of parents in a way for me. So to be able to give back that same thing to these students, I think a lot of times we forget that the family structure as it is now, a lot of these kids have broken families, maybe a single parent family, or they live with an extended family member or a parent that works a lot. So I think a lot of these kids see teachers as kind of that stabilizing adult figure in their life. And I think that's an important role that teachers have to play. I also think you just need to be grounded in the classroom. I think that's important. I've been out of the classroom about 2.5 to 3 years. But I always make sure I'm talking to teachers and I kind of hear what's going on in the classroom, because at the end of the day, all these policies, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. And I think that's a perspective that we can't forget.
Awesome. By the way, before I forget, one of the things you talked about there was that you were a tech director. So do you have a favorite tech app for the classroom or something?
I probably shouldn't endorse a particular.
Okay, I understand. That's right. That would be bad, wouldn't it?
I would like to come back to future podcasts with you soon.
So. Okay, not a problem.
But I think I don't think technology is a replacement for teaching, but I do think that technology can support teaching. But I think the really critical piece there is teachers have to have the training and the support, and there has to be a more overall plan about how technology is going to be introduced in the classrooms. It can't just be kind of a patchwork approach. And I think those are important, and sometimes those are left behind. I think a lot of times people feel like, well, if we just get in the classroom, then these things are going to magically going to enhance instruction. But a Chromebook or an iPad or a Surface is just like, you know, a dry erase marker or a TV or a board. If you don't know how to use those things effectively, then it's not really going to enhance learning.
Love it. That's so true. So very true. That could be a whole episode on itself. So, well, let's move on here a little bit. And before we leave the classroom, what I'd like to do is I'd like to get you to think about, you know, one of the things I do is I work with teachers who struggle with classroom management. I teach a classroom management class, and I get in and watch them teach and try and give them advice and some support and how to help them work in those situations. So what thoughts do you have for a classroom teacher looking for help with classroom management?
I'll say from the state, what we've, I'm sure a lot of your listeners has heard of PBIS and the school culture.
Yes.
Focus around that. And really that has been mostly on the school itself overall. And that team is really starting to look at how does that look like in the classroom. And really that connects with the classroom management there. And they've created some modules for classroom management. And I have the web address. It's at gadoe.org/PBIS. But we really think that this is a critical, we hear this a lot from teachers, but we've talked about as a state, how can we create, we have a lot of professional learning that we've developed, a lot of resources and support, but it's scattered across our website, and it's really difficult for teachers to find. Like if I was a classroom teacher, I wouldn't know to go to that website to look for those types of resources. So we've talked about creating a professional learning platform that's statewide that we can upload things that we've created, and then we can work with RESAs and districts to create things or curate things that they've created to really provide teachers with kind of 24/7 access to all these resources and really have a blended model. It could be Having some face-to-face events, like a calendar on there, so some of the things that you're providing that's available to teachers, having those types of events on there and trainings. It can be self-paced, so they can be modules that they can earn some sort of badge or certificate through, or it could be some sort of blended approach. And we've talked about how can we work with some of our partners like the Reese's, but also the Georgia Virtual School is under us, and we've talked about how they can support that professional learning as well. But kind of the larger picture, that's something we're really looking at to provide that support to teachers.
Excellent. Thank you. So let's use that to segue in then to the Vision 2020. This is an initiative coming from the State Department of Education and under Richard Wood's leadership, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so tell us a little bit about Vision 2020.
Well, just to give you a little background first, so what the Vision 2020 does is really capture where we want to go as a state. So we really thought that what we needed, particularly from the department's point of view, was kind of long-term, where do we want to go? And where are some goals? How are we going to get there? And then we worked on a strategic plan when the state school superintendent came on board. We worked on a strategic plan, and the strategic plan is really, how are we going to get there? And then the booklet is, what have we accomplished? So we've done an Educating Georgia's Future booklet, and it has kind of the highlights or the accomplishments that we're making there. But kind of pivoting back to the Vision 2020, we really thought it was important to have kind of a positive vision that really captures where we're going to move as a state. I think when you kind of look at the list, you can kind of see that we're making a lot of progress in lots of different areas, but this would kind of give us focus as a department, but also as a state. We've heard from a lot of superintendents that they would appreciate, again, not a mandate, but just kind of a guide of what they can focus on as a district. And I think this document starts to capture some of that.
Excellent. Now, before we go any further, I want to make sure that I bring people back to Educating Georgia's Future pamphlet that you have. Is that available online?
That on our homepage, gadoe.org.
Excellent.
Yes.
And I'll link to anything that Matt talks about that is has links online. I'll put them in my show notes so that you can come back and find them. So those of you who are driving right now don't have to write this down real quick. But it is a is an awesome compilation of what George has been working on, and it really is succinct in explaining, and I really like the way it's put together.
Yeah, we really tried to give kind of a high level view of where we're going, what accomplishments we've made, and just something that's public friendly, so the public understands kind of what we're doing as a state.
Excellent.
What we're focused on.
So, are there any particular ones that you'd like to get into that make up Vision 2020, or because like one of the ones that I'd like to get us to talk a little bit about, obviously, is that one of the things that we're talking about here is graduation rates and looking at the pathways or the types of classes and credits that kids can earn and the standards that the teachers will follow, as well as then focusing on, you know, schools becoming STEM or STEAM certified. And there's many other components of this. So can we talk just a little bit about maybe talking about, you know, the idea of, let me choose.
I can point out a few and then want me to just.
Let's do that.
Okay. I'll touch on, the first one I'll touch on is Georgia will exceed the national average graduation rate by 2020. We're currently on the cusp of 80%. The national average is around 83%. It probably will go up a little bit before 2020. But we've made some pretty significant gains in the area of graduation in the last few years. Some of that has been policy changes, but also some of it has been increased flexibility for the core credits. So we've given schools and students some flexibility with what counts as a math class, an ELA, science, particularly in that fourth core credit. Also, we looked at our CTAE pathway completers, and kids that complete a CTA or a career tech pathway, they have a 95% graduation rate, and that's something we're really proud of. And then another statistic that is, I think, is exciting is kids who just take an AP class, and this is across subgroups, have about a 97% graduation rate. So we're seeing a lot of gains in that area, and again, we're trying to make sure we exceed the national average by 2020. But we're not just focused on the quantity, but also the quality. So the next goal underneath that is by 2020, all those kids who do graduate are going to have some sort of college and or career credit after they graduate. So that can be a AP credit, can be a technical school certificate, can be an industry certified credential, but there's lots of options there. But we want to make sure that not only do they leave with a diploma in hand, but they have some sort of hook that will kind of create a bridge from secondary to post-secondary. And I can probably the biggest kind of change that we're trying to drive is around testing.
Okay.
Last year with Senate Bill 364, we were able to reduce the number of high-stakes tests for students. We also worked with the State Board of Education, and they adopted a rule that kids who are taking college courses don't have to come back and take the high-stakes tests that's connected with that. And so those have been some positive policy changes. I think in the past, it's kind of been a choice between some people that want to high-stakes test everything and then others that don't want to test anything. And what we're trying to find is that middle ground. And what we don't want to create is a vacuum. What we want to do is, and this is in the narrative of the Vision 2020 plan, is we want to set up like a assessment innovation fund and give grant money to school systems to develop formative assessments that they can use in those areas. There's a lot of districts that have approached us that want to do performance task or portfolio-based assessments, competency-based assessments, and what we really like to do is our assessment division partner with those school districts, provide some funding, kind of work out what those assessments would look like, and then us have a library of assessments that districts could tap into to use on the level. We also see a good opportunity with the grades 1 and 2 numeracy and literacy assessments that came in 364 as well. That's not a high-stakes test, but we're working with GPB, and we want to do some sort of gamification assessment. So we don't want this kind of every kid stops and pulls out their pencils and it's a multiple choice type of test in that high stakes environment, high stress environment. What we're looking at is doing kind of gamification activities. So kids are playing a game and they can be given in any sequence that the teacher needs to give them in, but the teacher is still getting that information, but the kid doesn't have the high stress or high pressure of a high stakes test. And we're hoping that if we can get that right in the grades 1 and 2, then we can start scaling that up, especially in the K-5 area, and kind of show what testing could look like. I think Milestones is a good leap from CRCT, but I think we can go to a step further, and I think this would give us an opportunity to show not only Georgians but policymakers what that looks like, and what testing can really become.
That's awesome. I think that I would think that there is a huge world there that because part of the complaint is the stress and the anxiety that the tests create, especially if they're just one type, which is you read the question and you bubble in the answer.
Yes.
And the gamification obviously is something that would make a kid kind of pop into their world where it doesn't feel as stressful, I would think.
And there's been a little bit of this work done by GPB on the 8th grade Georgia history. So they've put together a digital textbook, and they've also put together a game with that, and they brought in students as a focus group, and the students got to design the characters and kind of what the adventure would look like. But they're still getting information, soliciting information about Georgia history. It's just in a different way that's a little bit more appealing to students and a little bit more engaging.
Excellent. What would you like to focus on next? What would be another one of the... Because there's 14 points here, so we're not going to go through each of the points. But
I do think that sometimes things that are left out that are important that we've tried to renew some focus on is the fine arts, making sure kids have access to fine arts. We brought on a fine arts specialist. They hadn't had that position filled in 20 years. We're also revising our fine arts standards. A lot of those are based on QCC standards, so we're going through a revision process there. And we're really looking at fine arts integration. So not mandating that kids have to take fine arts class. We want to open those opportunities up to them. But how can we integrate fine arts into the classroom for teachers that want to do that? So I think we brought a lot of focus on the fine arts. Our fine arts specialist, she said in the state when she was a fine arts director, there were probably four or five directors in the entire state of Georgia, districts that had fine arts directors.
Wow.
That number has almost doubled just in the short time that she's been there. So I think as the state has given more focus to fine arts, districts are given focus to fine arts too. And I think it's important. I think fine arts makes the content come alive. And I think for a lot of the kids, that's what brings them to school and makes them want to stay in school, is when you kind of have that engaging coursework. And the other piece of that is making sure kids have access to physical activity during the day, particularly in middle school and elementary school. So we've worked with Department of Public Health to support their Power Up for 30, which is an initiative where they try to get schools to sign on and support or to commit to providing students up to 30 minutes a day of physical activity. And that can be a traditional PE class, or that can be recess, or that can be within the classroom, just some activities that get kids up and moving. I think for adults, you can imagine sitting in a desk, you know, 8 hours a day with a little bit of movement, how that could kind of over time.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. So I think it's important to kind of get kids up and active. And so we've tried to focus on that too. And we are looking at, after the fine arts, updating those standards, looking at our PE and health standards and updating those, because a lot of those are very outdated as well. And I think we can look at those and again, make sure that those types of standards really blend with the core content areas that teachers are teaching.
Excellent. You know, it's funny. And as a someone who... is a trumpet player, and I was much better when I practiced. But you know, as a former principal and such, working with rebuilding fine arts programs, I love this. And I was never a band director or anything. I was a kid who benefited from having fine arts programs and being able to play the trumpet, be part of a performing group. As well as then it paid off for me to go on to college. And who would have known that it would have paid off for me as a principal to use it to help me reconnect with kids in buildings. And it's the power of the fine arts programs. I think a lot of them suffered under, as you know, people started looking to cut programs and stuff like this, and they really didn't realize what they were doing away with. And, you know, because there's so much in performing arts that just lends itself to making kids want to be in school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's the theater or the visual arts or the actual music programs themselves and the physical activity part, I can imagine that's kind of been ignored because there's been some of that aspect that's all been focused on, you know, we got to do better in math, we got to do better in reading, and what's this other thing? We'll just put it aside, you know.
And we've really been trying to push for a holistic approach. We talk about the whole child and how do we support the whole child. And we definitely think math and ELA, numeracy and literacy, are key. And that really forms the foundation. What are those foundational skills? But after that, kids need to be able to, we need to provide them with maximum opportunities and really look at how do we support the whole child. Because we're talking about preparing them for jobs that might probably won't even exist, or some new jobs that we can't even fathom while they're in the K-12 system. And I really think if we can provide kind of this whole child holistic approach to education, then we can give them a lot of tools to succeed once they leave high school.
That's awesome. Before we leave and close out on the Vision 2020 initiative, do you want to talk anything about, because you talked a little bit about literacy and so forth, talking about getting kids reading by third grade?
Yeah, so that's a commitment in our Vision 2020, literacy by third grade, numeracy by fifth grade. We actually brought on, she's head of our teaching and learning area of the department, a literacy expert from Georgia State, and she's been working within the department and also across state agencies and organizations to really spearhead literacy efforts in our state. She's pulling together a statewide literacy plan. And there's several things we have going on there. The first thing that we did is really take an inventory of what we're doing to support literacy as a department, and that's something we hadn't done before. So the department had heard the word literacy a lot, and we were doing a lot of things, but it wasn't really focused in a general framework. So that's, we've developed a framework, we've inventoried what we're doing, and really focusing our efforts. We're working very closely with the Get Georgia Reading campaign, which has done a good job of really raising awareness about the importance of literacy. We've held some community conversations where they go into these different communities and they show them their literacy data, and we talk about what can be impacting literacy rates. I think the big sea change in this area, and it doesn't just impact literacy, but I think it impacts all the academic areas, is for a lot of our history, I think, we wanted to see kind of a one-to-one connection between our efforts and the outcomes. And I'll give you an example of that. I think particularly in our school improvement division and how we use federal funding, if we saw a school with weak math or ELA rates, then we wanted schools to, or really mandated schools, spend money maybe on math remediation programs or extra math teachers or math tutoring. And those sometimes can have an impact. But what we're finding out, and I think the Get Georgia Reading campaign has done a good job of this, is other things impact that. Attendance impacts that. Discipline impacts that. And so what we're really looking at is building a data system that has all the data points that we collect and showing how data can inform what's taking place in the classroom. Because I think sometimes when we're trying to make those tight connections, we kind of, we don't allow ourselves to make a bigger impact. Because if you're focused on math and you just hire an extra math teacher, you do a math remediation program and your issue is really attendance and you're never doing anything about that, then I think your math scores are always going to be pretty stagnant. But that's kind of been a culture change that we've had at a department. And I think some districts have figured that out, but I think other districts are kind of still used to that mindset of that kind of one-to-one connection.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for sharing, and thank you for talking with us about Vision 2020. The initiative is awesome. Looking forward to the results that are going to happen as Georgia pursues this as a state. What I'd like to do is, first of all, if a listener would like to find out more about Vision 2020, where would they look?
So that it's on our website. It's at gadoe.org/vision2020.
Nice and easy to find. There we go. And if a listener would like to reach out to you, what would be the best way?
Sure. I'll give them my personal email address. So it's mattjones@doe.k12.ga.us.
Awesome. So last two questions I like to ask my guests. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers and they haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
First off, I would thank them for going into teaching. I think we need as many talented and high-skilled people as we can, and I think having these 100 teachers that are committed to entering the profession is something that should be celebrated. The next thing I would tell them is stick to it. Particularly those early years, teaching can be very challenging. I know, to tell you a short little story, is my first year teaching, I got there and my principal's walking me to my classroom. And she says, you have a newer classroom. This was an addition. It's a bigger classroom. She's really trying to sell this classroom. So I open up the door, and in the middle of my classroom is just a computer cart with a monitor sitting on it. There's not a teacher's desk. There aren't any student desks in there. I'm like, is this some sort of joke? I don't remember this from my prep program. And then I remember our first faculty meeting. She says, now, you know, Matt over here, he needs some desks. So if you could send him some desks, we really appreciate that. And you can imagine the type of desk I get.
Right.
The ones that are barely held together. So I get those desks. I get about 10 of those. And of course, I taught ninth grade, so the parents are going to come for parent night up there. So I'm trying to get everything together, and I'm over there with a teacher's desk that is held up with some dictionaries on one side. I got my 10 student desks that are held together by the grace of God, and then the custodian there had got me some lunchroom chairs to make some rows, so I wouldn't look too pathetic. So here we are. Parent night, they come in there. These parents are coming in there. They're probably like, who the heck does my student have or as a teacher? But that's just, you know, that was my kind of, and eventually I got brand new desks, which was nice. But that's just those types of things that you're really kind of say, here's your classroom, good luck to you. You really need a support structure, and you really just need to stick with you with it. It's like we say that teaching is an art, but very few artists pick up the paintbrush and paint a masterpiece at the first go. And experience makes a difference. And I know sometimes people downplay experience, but I can promise you as a first year teacher or first few years teachers that you will go across the hall and you will seek out the veteran teachers. You're not going to find another first year teacher to talk to most of the time. You're going to seek out the experience and the people has gone through it. But I think just sticking with it, it does get easier. It's very, very rewarding. It's probably the most challenging thing you'll ever do, but it's also the most rewarding thing that you'll ever do. I also would tell them to be active in their profession. Unlike most professions, our professions are impacted a lot by policies that are set locally, state, and at the federal level. And if you just try to isolate yourself in the classroom, those policies are going to find their way in. And some of them are very positive policies, and some of them can have a negative consequence. And that's kind of how I got to where I am today. As a teacher, I saw what my kids needed, and I saw some policies that were barriers, and I started asking questions, and I started kind of tracing the lines, and I got involved. And I think teachers need to be respectful, but they need to learn about the policies and be active and provide feedback to policymakers. I think that's extremely important. The next thing I have is, I think every teacher is about the kids. And I think that's important focus, but that focus should broaden our efforts, not narrow their efforts. I think a lot of times teachers are kind of look at the classroom and say, I'm going to make sure this kid is served. And I think that's a good thing, but I think they have to understand there's a lot of outside things that impact that. And if teachers don't get engaged with those things, then making that possible for that student can be almost impossible to do. And then the last piece of advice I would give to teachers is do what they do best, which is educate, and really educate the public. A lot of our efforts are focused on educating students, but I think we really need to focus on educating the public, not on just the negative things that are taking place, but the positive things that were taking place. And we're trying to lead by example at the department with that. So I think all the documents that you'll see definitely has a very positive image of where we're going to go. But I think there's a lot of reality in there with this is what we're dealing with, and this is what we're doing to try to overcome these challenges. And you have to have that balance. And I think a lot of times teachers are just too busy or too scared or just feel like it's not their role to step out of the classroom and have conversations with the community. But I think that's something now more than ever that we really have to do. And I think the thing that we have still is trust. I think the public trusts teachers and have a lot of respect for teachers. But I think we need to use that trust and respect to engage people in a conversation about how we can make schools better for students.
Excellent. Excellent advice. Thank you. All right. So last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
I don't know if this podcast is long enough to name all the teachers, but I think any teacher can think back to teachers that impacted them, that got them into the profession. And I think when we're looking at one thing that we did first, when the superintendent took office, we did a teacher survey because we found out that 44% of our teachers were leaving the profession by year 5 in Georgia. And we were wanting to know why. And we sent out a survey and we got their input. And we've made some policy changes based on that. But I think the critical thing, there's been a lot of talk about a PR campaign, which I think could have some merit to it. But at the end of the day, the best recruit for teaching is other teachers. If you have a teacher that you respect, them telling you that teaching is a worthy profession and something you need to go into is going to have a bigger impact than anything. And I think, again, every single teacher who's in the classroom now or who's out of the classroom can think of those teachers that inspired them to go into teaching. I would also tell them, we know teaching's a calling, but I would thank them for answering the calling. I think that teaching is a big sacrifice. I think good teachers, which I think the vast majority are good teachers, pour themselves into their profession and to what they're trying to do. And I think they make a lot of personal sacrifices, and I would thank them for that. And again, really allowing them, thanking them for allowing me to get to where I am today. I wouldn't be where I am today without those teachers. And I think of every single profession, whether it's doctors or lawyers or scientists, if they didn't have teachers, they wouldn't be where they are. And we talk about job creating and job creators. I think teachers are the ultimate job creators because they're the ones that really create all other professions. And I just think teaching is unlike any other profession. And my hope is after this journey and this stint at the Department of Education, my plans is to go back in the classroom because I've been able to do a lot of different things. I've been able to meet a lot of great people and be involved in a lot of great initiatives and have a lot of positive impact. But nothing I've ever done can be comparable to what I was able to do in the classroom and being able to have a positive impact on a student at that level and to really work with some of the hardest working people that I've ever met in my life. And that's been a honor for me and something I look forward to going back and doing again.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you very much. Well, Matt, I'm looking forward to hearing so much more as Georgia's Vision 2020, Educating Georgia's Future is, takes further shape and takes further hold. And as we move forward in its implementation and, I look forward to hearing more about what you're up to and so forth. And I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today.
Well, thanks for having me again. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Take care now.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.
Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? That's right. You can now find Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 on Google Play Music. Check us out.